You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 452 of our Civil War podcast. I'm Rich.
And I'm Tracy. Hello y'all. Thanks for tuning into the podcast.
On Saturday, January 16th, 1864, at the invitation of admiring Republicans in Washington, including Vice President Hannibal Hamlin, 23 senators, and 78 representatives who signed the note inviting her to speak, celebrated abolitionist orator Anna E. Dickinson delivered a fiery address on Capitol Hill before an impressive assembly of government officials, journalists, and other public figures, including President and Mrs. Lincoln.
Her address was titled The Perils of the Hour, and in it, the 21-year-old Dickinson raked Lincoln over the coals for his moderate policies, but received great applause and a smile from the president when she finally declared that, in the nation's hour of peril, she did support his upcoming reelection, despite his faults.
The address on Capitol Hill would enhance the 21-year-old Dickinson's growing reputation among Republican circles and spark many more invitations to speak. It would also inspire a barrage of criticism from her many detractors. For example, the Democratic-leaning Geneva, New York Gazette would include her address among, quote, the absurd endeavors of women to usurp the places and execute the functions of the male sex. It is a moral and social monstrosity, an inversion of the laws of nature.
However, this particular social inversion would be a benefit to some, since Dickinson, in accepting the invitation to speak, specified that all proceeds from ticket sales should be used to support, quote, the suffering freedmen.
Despite her young age, the 5'2" Dickinson was perfectly comfortable speaking in front of large crowds, even when what she had to say was sure to upset her audience. She'd made her first public speech, an address to the Pennsylvania Anti-Slavery Society, in 1860. A year later, she had her first major speaking success when 800 people bought tickets to hear her give a speech in Philadelphia titled The Rights and Wrongs of Women.
Then William Lloyd Garrison, the famous founder and editor of The Liberator, the country's most well-known abolitionist newspaper, brought her in for a lecture in Boston. Soon, word of her remarkable ability as an orator was spreading through the Northeast.
Anna Elizabeth Dickinson was one of the Civil War era's most celebrated public speakers and one of the 19th century's most famous women. She transcended the boundaries imposed on women at that time.
She was, in 19th century terms, a genuine celebrity. People would purchase her photograph and put it in a scrapbook right beside pictures of family. She was a real trailblazer as far as women speaking in public and being engaged in partisan politics. And yet, Anna Dickinson is little known today.
Well, we thought we'd do our part to rectify that situation. After all, anyone interested in what happened during the Civil War and why it happened needs some understanding of the conflict's transforming effect on society and on the status of women.
Anna Dickinson is not only a figure who did things that were important and interesting, but she left a legacy that influenced women in the next generation, since her experience not only revealed how women of that era could enter the public sphere, but the challenges they faced in doing so.
Anna Dickinson was born in Philadelphia in October 1842 to Quaker abolitionist parents. She grew up in a home surrounded by newspapers, books, and political debate. Her greatest education came in the Dickinson parlor, where guests included prominent abolitionists Frederick Douglass and Robert Purvis, president of the Pennsylvania Anti-Slavery Society.
Anna first entered the public arena in 1856 when she read a newspaper story about a Kentucky school teacher who had been tarred and feathered for publishing an anti-slavery letter. The outraged teenager fired off a letter to the Liberator protesting this affront to free speech.
4 years later, Anna joined a friend at a local meeting on women's rights. Upon hearing a male speaker declare that although his daughters ought to have the same rights as any man, women were nevertheless unsuited to have professional careers and thus were destined to lives of domesticity, a furious Dickinson rose to offer an impassioned rebuttal to the idea that a woman's place in society was limited to a domestic setting.
Before long, she was receiving invitations to speak at women's rights meetings around the Philadelphia area. In October 1860, she spoke at the annual meeting of the Pennsylvania Anti-Slavery Society, where she shared a platform with Robert Purvis and other well-known abolitionists, including Lucretia and James Mott and Oliver Johnson. By the outbreak of the Civil War, precocious 18-year-old Anna Dickinson was the young, charismatic darling of the abolitionist movement.
Anna took a job as a clerk with the U.S. Mint in Philadelphia, but even then she was clearly drawn to the speaker's platform. In October 1861, shortly after the federal debacle at Ball's Bluff, she once again spoke at the annual meeting of the Pennsylvania Anti-Slavery Society, where she unleashed a spirited attack on Major General George McClellan, a Democrat and the commander of the Army of the Potomac. The speech pleased her audience, but it also cost her the job at the Mint.
In the spring of 1863, William Lloyd Garrison helped arrange a series of paid speaking engagements in New England and New York. Anna also spent time visiting sick and wounded soldiers in hospitals, which led her to give a series of lectures titled Hospital Life.
In early 1863, just as opportunities for paid speaking engagements were drying up, Dickinson was approached by the New Hampshire Republican State Committee to campaign in the upcoming elections. She easily and rapidly made the transition to political stump speaker, delivering a series of successful lectures across the Granite State, immediately followed up by similar engagements in Maine.
As her reputation as a stump speaker rose, the lucrative political offers poured in. Dickinson spent several weeks speaking in Connecticut for the Republican gubernatorial candidate, culminating her tour with a heavily publicized election eve address in Hartford's Allen Hall.
When Anna spoke, she would string ideas together in intense bursts, sometimes so quickly that she had trouble keeping up with herself. Enthusiasm, rather than logic, was her strength. By the end of her addresses, she had persuaded audiences to accept her conclusions and take action. When Dudley Warner, editor of Hartford's Evening Press, heard her for the first time, he was so swept away that he had trouble taking notes. In the next day's edition, Warner gushed, quote, "Hartford has been astonished to listen to what a woman could say about politics."
As her reputation for stoking enthusiasm for Republican causes and candidates grew by leaps and bounds, she was the target of frequent attacks in the Democratic opposition's press. For example, the Hartford Times not only condemned the idea of a woman taking an active role in partisan politics, but snidely speculated that Dickinson would soon be offering kisses in exchange for Republican votes.
Well, in any case, after the ballots were counted in Connecticut, Republican William Buckingham was re-elected governor by just 2,633 votes. Anna Dickinson received her share of credit for Buckingham's victory, and when she left Hartford, the state's grateful Republican Party leaders gifted her with two powerful symbols of male approval, a pocket watch and, obviously with no regard for her Quaker principles, a Colt revolver.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The Nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the Nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Her success in Connecticut brought Anna Dickinson increased fame and invitations to speak before even larger audiences in towns and cities across the Northeast. After leaving Hartford, she traveled to New York, where she spoke at a rally attended by 5,000 Republicans. In May 1863, she earned an astonishing $1,000 fee for speaking in Philadelphia.
In July, she shared a stage with Frederick Douglass at a rally encouraging black enlistment in the Union Army. That November, she became the object of controversy when she accepted a large honorarium to deliver two lectures at Chicago's Northwest Sanitary Fair, which, like all such events, was designed to draw crowds and raise money for the U.S. Sanitary Commission's aid work with federal armies. Local Democrats questioned Anna's patriotism, criticizing her for accepting compensation from such an important charity. But the Chicago Tribune rose to her defense, pointing out that her fees were far less than those she would have earned back east, and thus she was, in essence, contributing the difference to the cause.
The highlight of Anna Dickinson's wartime career in the public arena and undeniable evidence of her contemporary popularity came when she accepted the invitation signed by Vice President Hannibal Hamlin and over 100 Republican senators and congressmen to make an address in Washington on Capitol Hill in January 1864.
In his book, America's Joan of Arc, The Life of Anna Elizabeth Dickinson, The Story of a Remarkable Woman, The Civil War, and the Struggle for Women's Rights, J. Matthew Gallman writes, "The Washington lecture was not merely a great honor, it was also a wonderful opportunity and an interesting political challenge, as recent events presented a complex political landscape." Like most abolitionists, Dickinson had been disappointed at the Lincoln administration's gradual approach to emancipation and its unequal treatment of African American soldiers. Moreover, on December 8th, Lincoln had issued his Proclamation of Amnesty and Reconstruction, which promised surprisingly generous terms to Southern whites whose states returned to the Union, while providing no protection for African Americans beyond emancipation itself.
Dickinson's Washington lecture was witnessed by nearly all of Republican officialdom, including the President and First Lady, and reported by many of the nation's leading newspapers. New Hampshire diarist Annie G. Dudley was among those in the audience and was pleased with what she saw. Quote, "Went to the House of Representatives to hear Anna E. Dickinson, who spoke on the perils of the hour. She had a very distinguished audience, the president, one or two members of the cabinet, senators, and members, and yet she was perfectly self-possessed. Her language was perfect and subject well connected, used no notes except a few words on a slip of paper which she rolled around her fingers."
On that grand political stage, the 21-year-old Anna navigated a careful path between Republican extremes. On one hand, she itemized a long list of radical Republican grievances against the moderate Republican president, pulling no punches even though Lincoln sat in the audience. On the other hand, she cleverly built her address to the conclusion that the perils of the hour required continued support for the president.
The good-natured Lincoln appeared to enjoy the event, even though he received a serious tongue-lashing. Dickinson's eventual endorsement of the president prompted tremendous applause from the partisan audience. When the president and first lady rose to leave, the audience clamored for a few words, but Lincoln declined. Afterward, the Lincolns reportedly met with Anna in the office of the Speaker of the House.
Dickinson's friends and advisors offered unstinting praise of her performance. Newspaper correspondent Whitelaw Reed authored a celebratory account for the Cincinnati Gazette. Kansas Senator Samuel Pomeroy sent her a note praising the address as, quote, "an entire and complete success," exclamation point.
Essayist and novelist Charles Dudley Warner congratulated Anna for conquering Washington, saying he wished only that Richmond would fall so easily. Invitations poured in, asking her to repeat her address in towns and cities across the North.
At the same time, the success of Dickinson's address pushed some of her Democratic critics to new heights of outrage. The New York World was particularly aggravated by her appearance on Capitol Hill, declaring, quote, "She attracts crowds when she speaks by appealing to the same love of the monstrous which Barnum has made his fortune in exhibiting woolly horses, dwarves, Fiji mermaids, and other queer fish. Yet this silly young person was allowed the use of the Hall of Representatives last Saturday to make one of her unwomanly displays."
Since she was a passionate, effective mouthpiece for the Republican Party, and therefore at the center of partisan political debate, it's not surprising that Anna Dickinson's critics tried to find the best way to minimize her power, and often used her gender to do so by claiming that she was acting in an improper way. Those critics explicitly stated that she wasn't staying within a woman's proper sphere.
Despite striking a nerve among Democrats and those opposed to women's rights, by the war's final year, Anna Dickinson was nevertheless a true celebrity. Photographers vied to take her picture. Fans clamored for autographs. Young girls wrote seeking counsel. And politicians recognized that she was a woman to be reckoned with. By the close of the Civil War, she had risen to a unique position in the public arena among America's women.
Interestingly, with Abraham Lincoln's assassination in April 1865, Dickinson faced something of a dilemma since she had been so critical of him, and after his death, some people advised her not to comment on his legacy. Others said, "No, you must speak."
In the end, she did speak publicly a few times about the martyred president. She held true to her own sense of justice by saying, essentially, I'm not going to come before you now and say I agreed with him, but he was a great man.
After the war, Anna Dickinson remained in the public eye for a generation, first as one of the nation's most sought-after Lyceum speakers, and later as a less successful playwright and actor. She also published several books, including a novel defending interracial marriage.
FYI, the Lyceum movement in the United States was an early form of organized adult education. It featured lectures by noted speakers, dramatic performances, and debates. The Lyceum movement was especially popular in the Northeast and Midwest.
Anna's highly celebrated public life was lived against a backdrop of personal illness, recurring family tensions, a series of failed relationships with various men and women, and a long list of private conflicts. In 1891, poverty-stricken and increasingly irrational and cantankerous, she was committed to an asylum by her sister Susan.
The once famous orator took her case to court and eventually won her freedom, and then won small settlements from several newspapers that had trumpeted her insanity. Anna Dickinson spent the final four decades of her life in quiet obscurity, eventually dying in Goshen, New York in October 1932, less than a week before her 90th birthday.
In the conclusion to America's Joan of Arc, Gallman notes that by the time she moved to Goshen, Anna Dickinson had long since drifted from the public's memory, but that the obscurity in which she lived her final years is hardly a measure of her true importance.
Her behavior in later life no doubt damaged her legacy. She had always had a strong personality and explosive temper, and as she grew older, she drove friends and admirers away with her harsh sarcasm and bewildering bouts of rage. Nevertheless, her most significant legacy was as a Republican stump speaker and Civil War patriot. In her early 20s, audiences had filled halls to hear her brand of radical Republicanism blended with passionate patriotism. Abolitionists had embraced her as one of their most eloquent advocates. Wartime Republicans credited her with swaying several crucial state elections. And in early 1864, party leaders invited her to speak on Capitol Hill. Then, for years after the war, as one of the 19th century's most famous celebrities, she remained one of the nation's most popular public speakers and continued to transcend the boundaries imposed on women at that time.
That means it's time for this episode's book recommendation, and it should come as no surprise that our recommendation this time is
America's Joan of Arc, The Life of Anna Elizabeth Dickinson, by J. Matthew Gallman.
You can find a complete list of all of our book recommendations if you head over to the podcast website, which is www.civilwarpodcast.org.
We want to take a moment to say thank you to the newest members of the Strawfoot Brigade, Theodore S., Tyler F., and Frank A.
And we also want to thank Frederick H. and Douglas M. for their donations.
And then, as the curtain comes down on this episode, we'll remind you that the music you hear at the start and at the end of every show is from the song Midnight on the Water, and we use it with the kind permission of Spiritwood Music. All right, thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. Tracy and I do hope that you join us again next time, but until then, take care.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.